I don't know how much of that you were recording. Did I say anything inappropriate?
No.
Did I curse? I don't know.
You did not.
Okay. Whew. That was close.
I'll bleep it.
Sometime I think we should just like put in some random bleeps to make it sound like we're cursing, even though we're not. That could be fun.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And not Elise McCarter this week.
Nah, not this time.
Yes. You know, our recording timeline is a little funky right now.
Who knows?
So
what day is it? It doesn't even matter.
She may be back in town when this comes out, but we recorded it when she's not in town.
We think. Do we know that?
I know that. Okay.
That would have been embarrassing.
Yeah. Yeah,
we just forgot to call her.
She's waiting downstairs. We're going to get texts here. Like, where are you guys?
Don't worry about it.
Yes, but we're back in the Bible.
Yeah, in the Bible again.
Yes.
We finished the chronology without you.
You did. I listened.
Yeah? How'd we do?
Good job.
Thanks.
Yeah.
We gave Ezra and Nehemiah a half thumb on your behalf. Was that an okay?
Yeah, that's very
okay.
Accurate.
That's good.
Like, I would not want to give them no thumb.
Right, because... lightning bolts.
But yeah, half them. Half them is pretty accurate. Yeah.
All right, glad we got that.
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, from my perspective, the story of the Israelites in the Old Testament ends in a whimper, not a bang.
Yep, that's true. Like, not a thriller at the end.
Yeah, it starts off awesome and peters out towards the end. Yeah. Like most things, I guess.
Yeah. Fortunately, as Christians, that's not where the story stops for us.
That's true.
Our ending's a little cooler.
Our ending has dragons.
So, got that going for it.
But we're not talking about dragons today.
No, not today.
Talking about the prophet Isaiah.
Though we could talk about a dragon. I think there's something from Isaiah that talks about a dragon.
Maybe. I don't have it in my notes.
We don't have all 66 chapters ready to go here.
No. Yeah.
All right. What do we got first? Do we have a news story?
I do.
Okay.
All right. Are you familiar with fast food?
I am very familiar with fast food.
Me too. I just ate fast food.
And
right
not just
recording.
The food that I eat quickly, but yes.
And are you familiar with Popeyes?
I am. We have one just around the corner. From
we
the
do.
Church.
It is
one of few.
Yeah. If you want a quick meal, it's one of three
options.
McDonald's, Popeyes, or Taco Bell.
And let's be honest, it's really one of two because nobody's going to Taco Bell.
I sometimes do.
Nope.
Yeah.
I will go hungry for days before I go to Taco Bell personally.
Sure. Popeyes offers a new meal.
Okay.
Called the I Don't Know Meal.
I like this.
For people who can't decide what to get.
Oh, there's too many good options. Is it just like chef's choice? You pay a fee and they just give you whatever they think is fair?
I'll go over to what it is in a second. But what do you think about just any fast food place offering an I don't know meal?
I mean, on spec, I'm a little skeptical. But I kind of like the idea of like a chef's choice. Like you say, I don't know, and you're going to get one of these five things. And as long as you're okay with those five things, then you know. Or maybe you're only okay with four out of five. That's a little risk.
Sure.
A little adventure in your lunch. Yeah.
Well, I mean, in Popeyes, it's basically like...
chicken.
Do you want chicken on a bone?
Right.
No bone, or no bone with a bun?
Right.
Like, that's really your only
maybe
three
shrimp.
Options.
Do they do shrimp?
They
do.
I guess, I think they only do that during Lent, though.
No, they have it right now. You
can
go get shrimp right now.
Interesting. Yeah.
They do the butterfly fried shrimp thing. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, if you like fried chicken, you like fried shrimp.
Sure.
They taste
Come
exactly.
on.
They taste pretty much the same.
Shrimp is the chicken of the sea.
Yes.
Get out of here, tuna. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm okay with this. AC coming on.
I don't know. Is that a problem?
Nah, we'll just go plow through.
Okay.
It's hot outside, so.
It is hot outside.
Sometimes, you know, my wife and I will be talking about getting food, and she'll be like, I don't know what I want to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't like this interaction.
I'm
I know
familiar
she's
with
probably
this conversation.
Listening.
Yeah.
Because it's then I just like name restaurants and she says no. It's kind of how this works.
That sounds like fun for you.
Yes. It's like, I'm just going to keep guessing until I get it right. So an I don't know meal maybe is the solution here of like, let's go here. Do you know what you want to get? I don't know.
There it is.
Great.
You
just
ordered.
Say that.
Yep.
And food will be given to you.
Yeah. Okay.
No. But here's the problem, I think, with the I don't know meal.
What's in the I don't know meal?
It's a fixed thing.
Oh. So you do know.
You're ordering. You're
making a choice.
I agree. If it was one of a couple options, chef's choice.
Is it just one? Is it like a lot of, or a little bit of a lot of things? Is that what the, no?
It's,
what is this?
It's not even like a sampler.
Okay.
Which I also would be on.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
If you go to McDonald's and you're like, I want the I don't know meal, and it's like a cheeseburger, four nuggets, some fries.
Yeah.
And like, you know.
A McFlurry.
Like,
that's
great.
Yeah, I'd eat that.
But this is, it's just a chicken sandwich and a premium lemonade.
That's the I don't know meal?
Yeah.
That's the lamest I don't know meal that they could have thought of. Like, that's terrible.
I agree completely. That's terrible.
Of all the things, premium lemonade. What even makes lemonade premium?
I'm with you. I don't know what this means. Premium lemonade. Does this mean like it's freshly squeezed?
It better be. They better be like squeezing the lemon into my cup. That better be what happened.
Minute Maid. You know, they just press the button. Right. On the machine. Yeah. And chicken sandwich is already the meal. Like you could already order a chicken sandwich.
And doesn't even come with fries.
Popeye should get the choice of side.
So does the I don't know meal come with a choice of side?
No side.
What is this? This is terrible. I agree. The Popeye's I don't know meal should just be a side sampler.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Because they have like five sides that you can pick.
Though four of them are terrible. So, you know, why would you bother? But do
you just get fries?
Yes, of course I just get fries. What else?
Well, I mean, usually if I'm eating fast food, I'm eating it somewhat on the go.
Yeah, I don't want to eat mashed potatoes while I'm driving. I mean, their mashed potatoes are fine.
Sure, driving with my knees trying to eat mashed potatoes. Right. Yeah, doesn't.
What else do they have? They have like
red beans and rice.
Yeah, no, thank you.
I like red beans and rice.
I mean, I do too, but not from a fast food place.
All right, coleslaw.
I don't like coleslaw.
And there's one more, but I forget it.
Because nobody wants it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Is a biscuit? Do they count a biscuit as a side? I mean, I know it's not a side option, but is that in their sides menu?
No, I think you just get the biscuit.
The biscuit should be part of the I don't know meal.
Is part? Yeah, I agree. They don't offer the biscuit with the chicken sandwich. It's just when you get
cool, because you've got the bun with the chicken sandwich.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
The bun, but I'm saying they already gave you a carb. All right,
it's a lot of carbs. Yeah,
I love carbs as much as the next guy. Probably more than the next guy. All right,
sure.
I have an unhealthy relationship with pasta. I get it, but. Yeah. They gave me the bun.
And this is also only available at participating locations. So I think if you just go to any Popeyes and you just say, I don't know, when they ask what you want, you might not be getting anything.
I think we need to go test this out. This is the easiest road trip we've yet come up with for our podcast.
That's true. We just have the closest.
Literally have to walk around the corner.
You don't have to go to Louisiana or to hunt a Bigfoot.
Right.
We have to drive 4 minutes to Popeyes and say, I don't know.
We could do this. All right. We'll report back, listeners.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of funny if we reported back on an episode before this episode is released.
We've got good news.
We pre-release.
We're recording this one pretty far in advance.
We are.
Who knows what the world will be like when this comes out? I don't know.
Yeah. You just got a meal. Congratulations. Yeah,
premium lemonade.
Maybe we'll just have to speak the words I don't know and the food will just appear.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's $3.99, so I guess maybe that's a deal.
Yeah,
a sandwich and a drink for $4.
That's not a bad deal, but like, why call it? I don't know. Why not call it just like a special thing?
I'm with you. Special
sandwich deal.
Yeah.
Can you get the spicy chicken? Can you get the spicy? I don't know.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I've got some questions for Popeye. Listen, Poppy.
Yes.
Pops.
Can bring Popeye out of the studio.
That's right. Yeah. You and I need to have a conversation. Is Popeye's named Popeye for the Sailor Man? Is that why it's named Popeye's? Or is there another reference that I'm missing here?
You know, my Popeye's history is not well-versed.
Because the lady on the commercials is definitely not Popeye.
No.
And Popeye does not make any appearance in their advertising,
and
as far as I can tell.
And Popeye from the commercials is not, I believe, a Louisiana man, so...
Yeah.
He eats spinach.
You mean the Popeye from the TV show, is not a Louisiana.
No, the cartoon, yeah.
He doesn't. Doesn't sound particularly Louisiana.
Yeah, maybe that's Creole. I don't know.
It could be. I don't know. I don't speak Creole.
All right.
And spinach, not fried chicken.
Yeah, spinach, not fried. Maybe that's what it should be.
Spinach. Yeah, I don't know. Meal should be spinach.
Definitely should have some spinach involved.
Yeah, I definitely want to get my spinach from a fast food restaurant. That's where I'm going.
I mean, there is like a brand of spinach, like Popeye's spinach.
There's a Popeye's brand spinach.
There is.
Does it come in a can?
But it's not from Popeye's the restaurant. It's Popeye's the cartoon.
Okay, so these must be different things.
But what else does
Popeye mean? Popeye's got to mean something.
I don't know.
All right.
We could Google this.
We could, but are we going to?
Yeah.
it's not going to happen. I got things to do today, Patrick. I don't have time to Google Popeye's. I only have time here to sit here and record about Popeye's. I don't have time to actually answer the question.
All right, let's get into Isaiah.
Let's do it. Okay. I love Isaiah. Can I go on the record?
Me too. It's great. It's wonderful.
It's beautiful.
Out of all the prophets... I mean, I love Jonah and Daniel.
Sure.
But because they have narrative aspects to mm-hmm. that. Isaiah has
they're a story.
Isaiah has like a chapter that's somewhat narrative.
Yeah.
But out of all the other prophets, Isaiah is really probably the best one.
Oh, it's lovely.
And, you know, Nehemiah, our last narrative one, ends. And then we pick up with Jesus some 400X, you know, plus years mm-hmm. later. Mm-hmm. Isaiah really is the gap, though, between the Old Testament and the New Testament. It really does fill in, kind of like pointing to Jesus right as it's ending. If you're reading the Old Testament and you wanted to be like, read through Isaiah and then go straight to the Gospels, it would like bridge a lot of the stuff.
Yep.
A lot of the stuff gets bridged pretty nicely.
Yeah. Even with the like 400-year time gap.
Yeah.
It still gets bridged.
All right. So it is 66 chapters long.
That's a long book.
It is long. And it's divided into two, maybe three parts.
Yeah. I like to divide it into three parts because then I get to say Trito Isaiah, and that's fun to say.
Okay.
So you get first Isaiah and Deuteronomy.
There's a
Isaiah.
Definitive part one, and that's chapters 1 through 39.
Yep.
And then there's either a part two or a part two and three, which is 40 through 66.
I do personally subscribe to the part two and three. Okay. That's my personal take on Isaiah.
I don't super care.
Yeah. I don't think it, like, my faith is not going to be shaken if somebody comes and like gives me incontrovertible evidence that it was only two. But when I tend to look at the evidence, I tend to look towards, there was probably three sections.
And we're going to get into this, actually. Yeah. When we get to chapter 40, we'll get into like what that divide looks like, because it is interesting.
It is, absolutely.
All right, so Isaiah is kind of divided up into two parts, not only division by chapter, but also themes.
Yeah.
So one is a judgment theme,
mm-hmm.
and this is going to be like, hey, Israel, and specifically Jerusalem, because we're speaking kind of centered around the kings of Jerusalem.
And the southern kingdom,
Their rebellion against God is going to come at a cost.
Yep.
And that cost is specifically going to be laid out as Assyria and Babylon.
Uh-oh.
They're going to come and conquer you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And because of their injustice, oppression, and their idolatry.
Yep.
And sprinkled in there is also a message of hope.
Like a little Parmesan cheese on top of the pasta. Yep.
Well, that God is going to fulfill the promises he made to David.
Yep.
A new king is coming.
Yep.
And that blessings and salvation will flow through Jerusalem
mm-hmm.
to all the world.
There it is.
Yeah.
That's why I love Isaiah.
Yes.
It's the hope part.
Yes.
The judgment part, it's fine. But the hope part is why I love Isaiah.
And really in these two sections, mm-hmm. If we want to say two and three combine.
Yeah.
Section one is mostly judgment with a little bit of hope.
Yep.
And section two is mostly hope with a little bit of judgment.
I do tend to lean towards section two. That's fair.
Yeah, I agree. Section two is a lot of fun.
Yeah. There's good stuff in section one, and we'll get into some of that. But yeah, section two is the highlight.
Yeah. So section one, this is again chapters 1 through 39, is really pointing towards this exile that is going to happen in Babylon.
Yeah.
And Isaiah is an interesting prophet in that he has the ear of the kings.
Yep.
So when the other big prophet in the Old Testament books is probably Jeremiah, and then Ezekiel are the two others, big by length.
Yep.
Jeremiah is mostly like kind of on the outskirts of the city and speaking more to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And Ezekiel's in the wilderness, but Isaiah's like in the courtyards.
Yep.
So he is an educated person. He is somewhat in the royal court atmosphere.
Yeah,
so
he's known. He's not an outsider. Yeah.
Yeah. So you would imagine, he's a big deal to Jerusalem.
Yeah. For Elisa's sake, we can say with certainty he would not be played by Woody Harrelson.
Definitely not.
Jeremiah, maybe, but not Isaiah.
Ezekiel, that's
a bit strong. Ezekiel, definitely. Yeah.
So do you want to do a casting here?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Isaiah, dream casting for Isaiah.
I came up with one.
Oh, good, because I'm terrible at these. And Elise and I had to pre-come up with ours last time.
Sure.
What do you got?
I have Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, okay. A little Iron Man vibe.
Yeah, because I think he could play it like Isaiah as like the smartest man in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of
arrogant.
Arrogant. Yeah. Uh-huh. And a little bit of kind of like a teasing, and kind of like he can really kind of like dig the needle in a little
bit. Yeah, he can make you, he can insult you without you making making you feel like you're being insulted.
Yeah.
That's a gift.
And so I think he could do that. Because Isaiah is definitely, as a writer, he's one of the smartest writers we're going to get.
Oh, yeah.
Like
absolutely.
He knows how to craft kind of a story and craft kind of how he's an analogy.
Yeah, a narrative without crafting a narrative, interestingly. Yeah.
Yes. So let's get to this. So first off, right away, we're going to get to this one analogy that is really kind of the central part of Isaiah.
Let's hear it.
There's an old Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
It's got sins of idolatry, injustice, rebellion.
Sure.
That Jerusalem will go through a purifying fire.
Okay.
And become a new Jerusalem.
All right.
One where all nations come to worship God and bring about a new sign of peace.
Okay.
So that's really like he's starting off with this theme. And this theme is going to be replayed a lot.
Uh-huh. And picked up on in the New Testament as well.
Yes. There's going to be a tree. That's the old Jerusalem. It's going to get cut down.
Yep.
And through that stump, a new tree will rise.
A new shoot.
A new shoot. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, this is going to get over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Isaiah chapter 6 is really where we get our narrative part.
Okay.
So this is Isaiah, and he appears before God.
Yeah.
God is there in the temple.
Yep.
He showed up to the temple, and there's God.
Cool.
You know.
It's handy.
Sure. Yeah. Surprise.
Yeah. Would it be? I don't know.
I don't
probably
know.
To like actually see God would probably be a surprise.
I think even if you showed up to church and God is there, you would feel like, a little bit of a surprise. I mean, like, you're like, I guess this is where you would be, but I'm also surprised.
I shouldn't be, but I am. There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Angels are flying around.
Uh-huh.
Or some kind of angel.
Seraphim, cherubim.
Yeah. They have six wings.
Yep.
They're covering their faces and their feet.
Yep.
Or their bottom half.
Faces and feet, euphemistically. We talked about feet a little bit with Ruth. Yeah. Yeah, we know the deal with that.
They're flying around. Isaiah has a breakdown.
Sure. Because why wouldn't you?
And he's like, oh no.
Yeah. This can't be good, right? This is the recurring theme with visions of God, is that this means I'm going to die.
Yes.
Or this means I'm already dead.
Yeah.
You can't see God and live. That's
yes.
the fear. Yeah.
And so he's going to be like, I have unclean lips.
Yep. That's no good.
And my people have unclean lips.
That's even worse.
Yeah. So this is it.
Yeah. It's game over.
Yeah. And so this theme, I remember at the beginning, this theme of like purifying fire, create something new,
yep.
is displayed here, even in this kind of encounter with God. Because one of the angels takes a coal and from the fire,
mm-hmm.
flies it down and touches Isaiah's lips with it.
That sounds lovely.
Again, I barbecue with propane, but if you use charcoal, don't touch your lips on it.
Don't do it. Do not this do
our,
this. Yeah.
This is our warning here. That's right.
Yeah.
We don't want you to do that. And then...
You're right?
Yeah.
Do you need me to touch your lips with a coal?
Maybe. And then God says, who's going to go to the people of Israel?
Yeah.
And Isaiah's going to say, me.
Here I am.
Here I am, send me.
Send me.
Yeah. This gets yeah, there's a whole song on this. This probably is preached often at like pastoral commissioning.
There are a lot of these.
Yes.
Yep. It was not at mine, but yeah, there were a lot of these. Yep.
Yeah, because it's definitely got this sense of like, there's this one charge, who will take it to the people?
And who's going to do it?
And this one person will take it up.
Yeah, lots of pastoral things, lots of like end of camp week things. You're like, here you go. You've got it. Take this back to the world. This is your message. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah. So
that's, it is lovely. It's a lovely story.
It's awesome. It's really cool.
Probably has less to do with the end of camp than we like to think. It does,
probably.
It's, okay.
it's really neat. Yeah. And this is kind of the one part where we're really in like a story form.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit at times, but not.
Yeah. We pop in and out of kind of a chronology of what's happening to Isaiah.
Yeah.
But it's not. Yeah. You don't read Isaiah because it's a narrative. Yeah. That's not what you're going for.
Absolutely not. And so from this, we kind of get into kind of the deeper roots where he's going to take that one theme that was expressed at the very beginning of Old Jerusalem, purifying fire, New Jerusalem, explore that over and over and over and over again. And first he's going to go to King Ahaz.
Yeah.
And God is going to tell him something like, he's like, here's what you're going to do. You're going to tell him all these things, but guess what? It's not going to work.
Yeah. He is not going to listen.
In fact, it will do the opposite of what you want it to do.
But you're going to tell him anyway.
You're going to tell him anyway.
Yep.
And it kind of uses this phrase, and if you're familiar with the Bible, it's a little bit of a callback.
Ooh.
That the people will harden their hearts to the message of God. So this
is, I've heard that before.
Yes, that was all the way back in Exodus,
where
Moses was speaking to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh's heart was hardened towards the message of God. So thematically, we're kind of saying, like, Israel has reached a place where they have left being oppressed and have become the oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the exact same as the Egyptians that used to enslave them.
Yep.
Like that they found themselves the villains now in the story.
Yeah.
So.
And that, let's be clear, that is almost certainly intentional, right?
Absolutely.
Whether that's God's intention of, hey, I'm going to use this same phrase so that Isaiah remembers it, or it's Isaiah's intention in, because Isaiah certainly would have known the story of Exodus, right? And that certainly would have been something that he would have known and studied. And so he's absolutely making that callback to make that connection, which is part of how we, or why we think that Isaiah is so brilliant as far as the authorship, is because we're making these really deep, meaningful connections that are beautiful if you just read it, but are even more beautiful when you get to the depth of what's happening with
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. All right. And then we're going to introduce one of the amazing parts of Isaiah. And I think about why Christians really like Isaiah is because he's got a lot of stuff that the authors of the Gospels will kind of pick up on and say, this is actually all about Jesus.
Sure.
And even if the authors of the Gospels don't pick up on it, and a lot of things that Christians later will be like, I see he's talking a lot about Jesus. Yeah.
P.S.
Yes.
Yeah. Mark missed this, but also, yeah.
Yeah. First, he's going to talk about this new king coming.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be called Emmanuel,
ooh,
which means God with us.
Ah.
Yes.
I do love that Emmanuel means God with us. That's me one too. Of my favorite, like, Bible nerd facts, because people say Emmanuel all the time, and you're like, do you know what that really means? And you drop that on them, and then immediately their head's like, and it's great.
Yes. I have tried to convince my wife to convince one of our babies that it should be named Emmanuel, because one of my favorite Spurs players is named Emmanuel. He's named by Manu.
So wait. Are you trying to name it after a Spurs player, or are you trying to claim that your child is God with us?
Well, it means God with us.
But also the Spurs player.
Yeah. That's the real reason. And really, that's not, I don't really think that we would ever do that. It's not going to make sense for our family, but I do like to
somebody out there. Just know that's a great name. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then that, you know, I think it's a pretty good wrap up for like the beginning, the first 39 chapters.
Absolutely.
It's going to, we're going to kind of circle back around. Hezekiah, you know, the big thing is Hezekiah at the end.
King Hezekiah.
Yeah. He is
who, if you recall from Chronicles and from Kings, was not great.
Not great. But he has this one shining moment where the Assyrians attack.
Ooh.
Hezekiah repents.
Yep.
Trusts in God. Jerusalem is saved.
Good job.
Awesome.
And then?
And then Hezekiah invites the Babylonians into Jerusalem.
Oh.
And it's like, hey, I want to show you something. Check out all our gold.
Like you do.
Like, isn't this cool how much treasure we have over here? And Isaiah shows up and he's like, what are you doing? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, this does feel like a good Robert Downey Jr. moment.
Not only, like, strategically does this not make sense, he's like, you just saw that God can deliver you when you repent and trust in the promises of God, and now you're trusting in an alliance with the Babylonians, who, spoiler alert, are not good. Like, they're bad.
Yes, yeah.
And Isaiah's right.
Yeah.
Because Babylon will turn on them.
Yep.
But it's going to take a little while.
It will. But they're going to.
About 100 years.
Yeah.
Ish.
Ish.
And then so chapter 39 ends with like this exile.
Yep.
So after Hezekiah, 100 years-ish pass, Babylon comes back, conquers Jerusalem, carts all the people off.
Right.
And this is where I guess this timeline gets a little interesting.
Right. But this is also why we're pretty confident that it's written by multiple authors.
Yeah.
Because 100 years passing for some of the stuff that, for a lot of the stuff that we're going to read in this, what we would call a second Isaiah or even second and third Isaiah, it would be very difficult for someone to have written that without being present for it. And it would be unlikely that Isaiah lived, was old enough to have written everything that he did with Ahaz and Hezekiah and then live another 100 years on top of that. We have no evidence that that happened at that time period.
Correct. Yeah. Because 40 will start again. Like they're out of exile.
Yeah.
So like we're in the Ezra Nehemiah time frame of things. And Babylon is gone. They've been conquered by Persia. And so a lot of time has passed.
Yeah.
So not only is there a lot of time between Hezekiah and Babylon, there's a lot of time between Babylon conquering, Persia conquering Babylon, and Israel going back. Mm-hmm. So it's a significant time. We're talking about 150 years after Isaiah's death. So here's the question is like, so who wrote all this?
Right.
We got some theories.
We do.
That I wrote down.
Okay, what do you got? What are your theories?
One.
My theory is a guy named Jake.
Jake.
From State Farm.
One is, it is still Isaiah.
Could be.
And he's a prophet, so he's getting visions of the future, or he is somewhat transported through time to witness things and write them down.
Yeah. Why not?
So that's one option.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
That's a perfectly legitimate, faithful possibility.
Yes. The other option is, it is Isaiah, but he's not transported through time. He has just written these things down in his timeline. They got passed down to his disciples, to their disciples, and to their disciples. And finally, they pulled out these old manuscripts and were like, this is really good.
Look at this stuff, yeah.
Man, Isaiah wrote down some good things.
Yeah, this is like the unplugged you know, script or something like that. Yeah,
and then they kind of re-edited it and kind of put it together for him and kind of like, here's Isaiah's next one or two sections.
Yep.
And so you have kind of this, it's Isaiah's writings, but it's been put together by people of
edited,
the time.
Yeah.
And then the third option is it's a writer who maybe was a follower of Isaiah and writing as Isaiah. It's like, kind of like a ghost writing.
Which is not an uncommon practice for the ancient world.
It's not uncommon for the modern world. I mean, we have...
I think it's less common now.
Yeah.
We don't have people who, like, you know, you don't today write as if you're George Washington and claim that you found something that George Washington himself wrote.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. But it would have been very common for somebody then to be like, yeah, Isaiah, to write it as Isaiah almost in honor of Isaiah. That would have been a more common practice at the time.
So what do you think it is?
I lean towards the last.
Yeah.
But I don't have a problem with any of them. Like, I don't think any of them have enough evidence to say this is absolutely the way it was.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything more or less faithful about any of them. I think it's just a matter of how do we experience God through each of them.
Yeah. The points for the last would definitely be after chapter 40 on, he never references himself as Isaiah again. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going to happen. And some of the languages and themes of the first 39 chapters have a kind of abrupt stop.
They kind of get lost, yeah.
And then new themes and new language kind of appears. So,
and so it all feels like Isaiah, but it's new.
You can kind of tell, like, this is not it's not the exact same voice. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean it's a different person. Mm-hmm. It could be a person who's seen some new things and is writing in a different way.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Two or three.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at.
But again, you know, all of this, you can be faithfully reading the scripture and any one of those can apply.
Yeah.
This is not a place where we have to say it's absolutely this.
For sure.
Like faith can be meaningful from any one of those avenues. Yeah.
And definitely when it came to like ancient tradition, I imagine the earliest readers did not care about that question.
That was not their point. Yep.
Even the early Christians did not care about that question. It does not matter. You know, but so if you're talking with somebody, it's not a gotcha.
Yeah.
If they like bring up like, oh, Isaiah could be two different people. It doesn't matter.
That wasn't the point. Yeah.
All right. So this part 2/part 3, because that also is a little bit of a mystery.
It is.
Is it one continuous work or is this kind of a tacked on epilogue?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. So
there's a little bit of a time gap, it feels like.
Yeah.
But it's not an insurmountable time gap as it's like not. The first.
Yeah. I mean, it is a bit of a thematic gap. Like if you look at it closely, it tends to look like 40 through 55 are probably written while the people are still exiled and haven't yet returned, but like the return is coming kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the last 10 chapters, 56 through 66, feels like it was written when they've come back.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that easily could have been someone who was in both of those places.
Yeah.
Or it could have been two different people. Again, same kind of idea. But it does have a bit of a break there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So 40 is going to start kind of with this idea that exile is ended or ending.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a mystery there.
Sure.
Yeah. And Israel's got a new task.
Okay? Yeah.
Be a servant to the nations.
Oh, okay. Serve everybody.
But they don't want to.
If you're surprised by that at this point, you have not been paying attention to the story.
They're like, no.
We're good.
In fact, they are instead want to complain and grumble, and they're a little mad.
Also not surprising.
At God.
Also not surprising.
Because they feel like, hey, God promised to be with us, and we got conquered. What's up with that?
Yeah.
God either is cruel to us, or he's inattentive to us. One of those two things.
Neither of those are great.
Agreed. So the first bit of Isaiah, part two, is going to be this idea that Isaiah, or the writer of this portion, is kind of explaining to people this trial format of like God explaining like those things you're saying about me are wrong.
Yeah.
And so you may have doubts, you may have accusations, but here's the thing. Exile was judgment. It was not neglect.
Yep.
And it was for your own good.
Yep.
Again, the ancient Israel viewed God's relationship with Israel, not God's relationship with me.
Right.
So like, even though, you know, there were definitely people in Israel who died in exile, they don't see that as like, then God is not with those people.
Sure.
They see God with the community, not with the individual.
Right.
Yep. So when it's Israel's own good, it's for the good of the community.
Yeah.
Even if it was really, really bad for the individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So, and guess what? God is saying, and I brought Persia to conquer Babylon.
Come on.
And get you back here.
I did all this for you.
Yeah.
Why you got to be this way?
Yes.
Why you got to play me like this, Israel?
Yeah. So, he kind of concludes with like, hey, God is the true king of history.
Yep. And not of Israel, of history.
Yes.
Which I love. Yeah.
And all the other gods and idolatry are foolish and ineffective.
Yeah.
And I think Isaiah chapter 44 is one of my favorite chapters of the Bible.
Oh, okay. What do you got?
It's amazing.
Hit us up with Isaiah 44.
Yeah. I'm going to give a paraphrase here because Isaiah is going to be like, let's talk about idols for a little bit.
Let's do it.
And idolatry is a huge theme of the Old Testament. It's major.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming up in almost every book of the Bible, this idea of idolatry.
It's always bad.
Always bad. And Isaiah is really going to get into this. He's like, here you go. You guys go out into the woods. You cut down a tree. You carve an idol with half of it. The other half you throw in the fire. What's so special about the half you carved an idol out?
Yeah.
Basically, like, you bunch of dummies.
Yeah.
Like, and basically, like, oh, you put this on your hearth to protect you, but then you have to protect it from thieves and marauders. Who's protecting who? You bunch of idiots. I mean, he really goes at him.
He
like,
does,
it's
yeah.
amazing.
It's fun.
And I love this idea. Like, and I think this analog to like modern idolatry of like the things that you think are going to protect you and give you meaning, you end up having to protect and give meaning to.
Ooh, yeah.
Is really powerful. Like, you know, this idea of like, oh, money is an idol, but then you spend all your time worrying about your money, protecting your money. It's not actually making your life better. You're dedicating your life to it, not the other way around. And so that theme is just so interesting. And Isaiah really is like really biting in this part.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
But here's the thing.
Okay.
Isaiah lays out this beautiful argument.
Yep.
It doesn't work.
Again, if you're surprised by this.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. Yeah.
It's not worked for a while now. So Israel is just as rebellious and hard-hearted as before.
Yep.
So God's like, fine, let's do a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so he's, instead of Israel being the servant to the nations, I'm going to bring out a new servant.
Right.
There's this new person coming.
New something coming,
Yeah, this new servant on its way, often described as a suffering servant.
Ooh, okay. That sounds like language I've heard before.
Yes. This new person or thing coming, and they are going to restore Israel back to God, bring light to the nations. It's clearly connected to this messianic king that's through the line of David. But now it's saying this king is not coming with like a sword. It's coming to suffer as a servant. And so we're readapting this one promise and giving it new meaning and a new light to it.
Yeah.
And this is really powerful.
For us as Christians, especially.
Especially, yeah. Because not only will the biblical authors of the New Testament latch onto this, Christians after Jesus are latching onto this imagery.
Absolutely.
And really saying, like, that suffering servant is clearly Jesus.
Right.
And I agree.
Or I think a better way to say it would be Jesus is that suffering servant.
Yes.
I think that I think it's helpful for us to put that in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know that Isaiah was writing this saying there will be a guy named Jesus who's coming.
Sure.
But I think that we see Jesus fulfilling this idea of the suffering servant that's being presented.
Yes. Because one of the things, you know, that's going to happen as Isaiah is writing, and this I think is in Isaiah 53, the suffering servant, they're going to suffer. They're going to die a sacrificial death. It'll even say, like, our sins kind of are placed upon him. The transgressions of humanity are placed upon him. He will die at the hands of his own people.
Yep.
And then he's alive again.
Oh, okay.
And through that death and then being alive again, it doesn't really have like a resurrection aspect to it, but he's alive again.
Right.
The people are restored and redeemed. And not just them. It's available to all the nations, this restoration and redemption.
Yeah, not just Israel, not just the people who are there, but all,
Yeah, and so as you can see, if you're familiar with Jesus, it's easy looking backwards to really say, like, yeah, that's imagery pointing us towards Jesus. Now, at the time, probably a lot of Jewish scholars who are very familiar with Isaiah would say, like, nah, 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 that's not Jesus.
Yeah.
In fact, today there are plenty of Jewish scholars out there that say, like, no, that's still not Jesus.
I would say most Jewish scholars would probably say that's not pointing to Jesus, because if they thought it was pointing to Jesus, they probably wouldn't be Jewish scholars anymore.
Yes. And so that kind of gives like part 2A.
Yeah.
And part 2 or part 3, part 2B or part 2-3 is whatever.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's really just kind of like some prayers and some poems kind of wrapping it all up.
Yeah.
and kind of like repentance, forgiveness, nations get invited to join the servants as a new nation. God is a redeeming king.
Good stuff.
A new creation. So it's really powerful, really beautiful stuff. Personally, I think 40 to 55
that's
is
the gold.
That's the real meat of Isaiah. Yeah. That's where you're really going to find your good stuff.
That's the money section for sure. Especially for us reading it as a Christian audience. I think that's really powerful. Sure. I mean, there's great stuff in each of the sections.
Yeah.
But if we were like rating these independently, section two would definitely have my highest. I would get a two thumbs for me for the section two.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, if you're like, I really want to read Isaiah, but I don't want to commit to 66 chapters.
Quitter.
Read 1 through 6 and 40 through 55.
Yeah.
Because 1 through 6 will get you.
But also just commit to 66 chapters. It's not that big a deal.
It's really good. Yeah. It is really
two chapters a day and you got it done in a month. You're fine.
Yeah.
You can handle this. We believe in you. Report back. Send us your book reports at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Any other thoughts on Isaiah? I think you got like a...
I do. I've got a little...
A quiz?
It's not a quiz. No, these are just like... I think that listeners are far more familiar with material from Isaiah than they might realize. And so this is like a quick hit of like things you probably have heard that are actually from Isaiah that you might not know are from Isaiah.
Yeah.
So this isn't like I'm not going to test you or anything. These are just things that you're probably familiar with, right? So let's see. We talked about Isaiah 6:8. I heard a voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send?" And I said, "Here I am, send me." Yeah. Isaiah 7, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son. We'll call him Emmanuel.
Boom.
Isaiah 9, for unto us a child is born, to us a son is given. Jesus, are also talking about Jesus. Isaiah 11, a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. We talked a little bit about that one. My favorite part of Isaiah, Isaiah 25, verse 6, on this mountain the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich foods. Goes on from there. Isaiah 40, comfort, comfort my people, says your God. We probably know that one. John the Baptist is going to pick up just a few verses after that with a voice calling of one in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. So if you heard John the Baptist say that, you've actually heard him quoting Isaiah. Jesus will also quote Isaiah. He'll quote Isaiah 61:1 when he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor." You mentioned Isaiah 53. He was pierced for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. We like sheep have gone astray. We probably know that one. Mm-hmm. Isaiah 60, arise, shine, for your light has come. And Isaiah 65, see, I will create a new heaven and a new earth. That does not originate with Revelation. Mm-hmm. John, John the one who wrote Revelation. There's a title there that I'm forgetting, but John, the one who wrote Revelation, is pulling from these Old Testament themes as well. So there's a lot of stuff in Isaiah that you probably have heard, or things that we use in our liturgy on a regular basis. The holy, holy, holy is the Lord. That comes straight out of Isaiah's vision in the temple, as you were talking about. And so all those things, I think there's just more to it. Than
even
we
the
realize.
Phraseology, like Wonderful Counselor, Prince of Peace, Mighty God. Again. Some Christians, I've read this in my research here, can even refer to Isaiah as kind of like the fifth gospel. Like it really is like has so much imagery and connection to Jesus.
Yeah.
Again, looking backwards, I don't know if the people at the time could put together this will play out like Jesus.
Yeah. And that is a helpful thing, right? Because a lot of scholars will look at, when we say, Isaiah 7, when you're talking about the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, right? And there's a lot of debate over the Hebrew word for virgin versus the Greek word for virgin, because the Hebrew word can either be a virgin or can just mean a young woman. And the Greek word that gets used to translate that has to mean a virgin. And so it's really in the Septuagint, which is the Greek version of the Old Testament. And then in the Gospels where we pick up this idea of a virgin is going to conceive a son, where it could have just been, well, maybe it was just a young woman. Isaiah is pointing to someone in the street like, look, they're going to conceive and bear a son before this thing happens to you. I think he's talking to Ahaz at that point.
Yeah.
Before this thing happens to you, Ahaz, the virgin, this one right here, they're going to conceive and have a son. And so there's question of, and this is part of our failure to understand Hebrew prophecy appropriately, right? Hebrew prophecy was almost always speaking to the immediate moment with future implications.
Yeah.
And we sometimes as Christians like to assume the future implications while ignoring the present moment that it was speaking into.
Yeah, because I think... Yeah, Isaiah and the Israelites at the time weren't being like, what in the world is this all about?
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't make any sense at all. Like, they are getting bits and pieces, but again, from our perspective, not the full picture.
Right.
And I think in reality, we don't have the full picture.
Sure.
Because we're only looking backwards.
Yourself.
You know, like, and God's picture is backwards and forwards at the same time.
Wow.
So,
yeah. It's like one of those 3D magic eye pictures.
My mind is blown. Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts here on Isaiah?
Nah, I like Isaiah. Do we want to do our ratings?
I do.
I'll give it a solid 1.5 thumbs.
I'm so close to 2.
Yeah, I know. If I could just do that middle section, it'd be a solid 2. But there's a lot of parts of section 1 that I'm like,
I would say once you get past chapter 6, like 7 through 39,
a little dry.
Is just, it's a lot of the same. Uh-huh. I mean, like, you get it.
Yeah.
Like,
if we could have had 7 through 39 be like 7 through 20.
Yeah, absolutely. Just cut that in half. Yeah.
Solid two thumbs all the way through. But yeah. But I'll give it 1.5.
It is so good. Yeah, again, especially with that Christian perspective. I think it elevates it to like this new level of kind of like, wow, this is so much here. Imagery about Jesus, and also like things that we think about Jesus found here.
Mm-hmm.
500 to 700 years before Jesus steps foot on this earth is really powerful.
Sure.
Like to really think about like this narrative that's pretty old, you know, all connected in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I also give it 1.5. It is the closest to 2 without being 2 that I think I've had so far.
Yeah. Elise, I'm gonna rate on her behalf, probably gives this a 1. She really likes the narratives.
And that's fair.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I think that's what she would say.
Yeah, there's no other of the prophets that will be as good as Isaiah, from my perspective.
Yeah. Jeremiah has some highlights, but overall, not as strong as as Isaiah.
Yeah, all of them will have their moments, but not as a complete package as Isaiah.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right.
Excellent. Well, hey, if you liked this episode, you can find all of the Beyond Sunday podcast at beyondsundaypodcast.com. You can, of course, listen to us on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Leave us a rating or a review. It really does help us get found by other listeners as well. And send us your thoughts. What are some parts of Isaiah that you have found or something that's been meaningful to you? You can send all those thoughts to us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday. Send me.
Here I am.
Yeah. Who will send Beyond Sunday to their neighbor or friend?
Here
or
we
family
are.
Member?
Send us.
Here you
to
are.
To your neighbor.
Send you or whatever. You get it.